Hello out there. Welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday morning here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, not the only Hoag you'll hear on the show today, strangely enough. We plan to have a lot of fun today. We have two very exciting shows and very similar in some ways to talk with you about today. The first show we're going to talk about is La Caja Folle, which is being performed out at the Barn Players. Then later on in the show, Italian Girl in Algiers is being performed by the Lyric Opera. So nice variety for you out there today. So we're going to first go out to Mission, Kansas. We're going to journey in our mind out to Mission, Kansas. Actually, to 6219 Martinway in Mission, Kansas, where the Barn Players have had their home for several years now. And with us to tell us all about their show, which is coming up. It's going to open this Friday, November 7th at 7:30 p.m. La Caja Folle. I can't pronounce it right unless I say it with a French accent, strangely enough. It's funny the way our brain works that way. Dudley Hoag is with us. No relation as far as I know.
I don't think so. I do, too. Yeah. I love yours, too.
Dudley comes to us, actually, by way of Kansas and the University of Kansas, but moved out to New York a few years ago, has moved back, and we might ask him a few questions about working in New York City, the city that never sleeps, Dudley.
That's right. It certainly does not.
You can make it there, of course. Yeah. You can make it
exactly.
But then, of course, you came back.
That's right. I don't know if that's a good sign or not.
Dudley has performed at Theater in the Park, at the Olathe City Theater, at the Barn Players, at the UMKC Conservatory, the Unicorn, Quality Hill Playhouse. During his time in New York, he was the director, the executive director of the New York City Gay Men's Chorus. He's back in town now performing at the Barn Players as one of the lead performers in the show. Which one?
That is right. I'm playing the roles of Alban and Zaza.
Oh, you get both.
Yeah. Same person, two different roles.
Has to be a lot of fun. We'll get into the story in a minute. Kip Simmons is with us once again. He directed the award-winning Barn production of Curtains. He has been a performer in Closer Than Ever, Company, Little Shop of Horrors, You're in Town, Bat Boy, New Brain, Assassins, Chess, Chicago, and also performed with the national tour of Schoolhouse Rock. Welcome back to the show, Kip.
Thank you.
I don't know which one of you to go to first. The director, such an interesting and fun show to do.
Oh, yeah, it's a great show. It's a great show.
Lots of costuming challenges in the show.
Yes, that's true. The show is based in a drag club in Saint-Tropez, so costumes are just out there. And our costumer Julia Ross has done a fantastic job, and she even made. I mean, our feather budget alone was $1,000, so that kind of tells you.
So you got beaten by Kayla to lose $1,000 in feathers.
the costume. Costumes are fantastic. Julie even made like showgirl headdresses.
Oh, wow.
Like made them. She took ostrich feathers and dyed them and made these beautiful, gorgeous headdresses and feather fans and boas and yeah.
Do you wear some of these?
I do. I wear a few of them. I'm not one of the showgirls, but that wear most of the headdresses and things. But I do have some feathers on several of my costumes and a couple boas that I use during the show. Yeah,
Was the play first and then the movie version? There's a movie, The Birdcage, with Robin, the late Robin Williams.
Well, it's actually based on a French play from the 70s called La Cage aux Folles, and then there's a very famous French movie of the same name that was based on the play. And then the musical is actually based on the play. They couldn't get the when they originally produced it, they couldn't get the rights to the movies, but they could get the rights to the play. So the original production of La Cage aux Folles opened on Broadway in 1983, and Birdcage is loosely based on that story. And that one came, when did that movie come out? In the 90s, I think.
Yeah, when the lawyers get involved, it always gets confusing.
Yeah, but so it's a little bit different from the Birdcage movie, but basically the same story.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the story for those who aren't familiar. They may have vague versions of what it's like, but there's nothing better than to hear the actual version.
Okay, well, it's set in Saint-Tropez in France, and it's the story of Georges, who owns a drag nightclub in Saint-Tropez called La Cage aux Folles, and he's been in a 20-year relationship with Alban, who also is the star performer of La Cage aux Folles, which in this case is played by Dudley. And they have raised Georges' son from a previous affair that he had, but they have pretty much raised their son, and he's 24 years old, and he gets engaged, he falls in love, gets engaged, and his fiancée's father happens to be an ultra-conservative politician who wants to shut down all the drag clubs. And so they become engaged, and her parents want to meet his parents. So they're in a little bit of a quandary what to do, because he has two fathers. And so insanity ensues when the politicians come to visit, and through lots of slapstick, Dudley's character actually ends up coming in playing a third character as mother. So it's all very fun.
Well, certainly you don't try to hide this from these people, do you?
Well,
no.
I think the original plan in the script is to not allow me or my character to be part of the introduction process that they go through, and to actually invite back Jean-Michel, the son's real mother. I don't want to give too much away about the show.
Well, let me just summarize by saying there tends to be some things hidden.
There are some things hidden, and we do our best to attempt to make the fiancé's parents believe that we are real in our characters, that we are real people in the world, and that I really am a woman. And as Kip said, insanity ensues.
So you must have a lot of costume changes.
I think there's 13.
Sometimes you're a woman, and sometimes you're two different.
Sometimes
guys.
I am a man, and sometimes I am a woman.
Number where he makes three costume changes all
during
in one
the number.
Musical number.
Right. Yeah. During the number, I think there's one costume change I make on stage. There are several other costume changes that happen very close to on stage. But I believe there are 12 different costumes that I wear in the show. Some of them are rather flamboyant male costumes, and the others are drag costumes. So
I see.
Yeah, it's the most important person in the show is my dresser.
I imagine.
As far as I'm concerned.
That's true.
Did you ever count up how many times you had to quick change?
No, you mean in my life?
Yeah, you're
no, that would be.
Well,
too
you're
many.
Rolling, you're right. But a number of times.
Oh yes, and
do
this
people
show,
assist you behind
yes.
the curtain.
I mean the dresser. My dresser. I couldn't do the show without her, and a couple other cast members that help on a couple of those, because there are some where it happens within a minute or two, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, I would say most of his changes happen
pretty
right
quickly.
Backstage, because I don't think he has any time to go to the dressing room to make any of his changes.
Yeah, no. I can't go to the dressing room because it's too far away, but my dresser meets me off stage, and whatever she has in her hands we put on, and I told her when we first started, if she puts me in the wrong costume, I'm going on stage in the wrong costume, because I have no choice.
That's true. Yeah. And you'll find a way to make it right.
But she is wonderful. She's absolutely wonderful, and is a great help to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have a choice in picking your costumer and your?
Oh yeah, I did. I was able to hire my own staff, and I've worked with Julia before. She did my costumes for curtains, and she also did my last year. I directed the production of Drood at the barn, and she did that. She's just fantastic. She's really a wonderful costumer and a wonderful person. So
I suppose the next most important job, other than director,
of course,
would be music director.
Yeah, music director is Martha Risser. She's a very well known music director, and in Kansas City. I've worked with her several times as a performer, and this is the second time that I worked with her on as a director and a music director. She's absolutely wonderful. She knows what she's doing, and she gets a really terrific sound out of any cast that she gets her hands on. She just does a really, really wonderful job.
Are you able to have a very large combo, or are you limited because you kind of, at the barn, they tend to hide the musicians back there?
Yeah. This is actually a version of the show that was produced in 2010, and it was a more scaled-down version. It started in London, but then it transferred over, and Kelsey Grammer was in this production of 2010, but it's kind of scaled down, and so this only has an orchestra of 8 people.
Yeah.
So, which is kind of small for like a big musical like this.
Yeah. Well, how many songs about? Let's start out with Dudley's song. Well, okay, he's counting. So I'll vamp and just say that, you know, oftentimes people are familiar with a song. They're used to hearing it on the radio or whatever, but they don't always know what show it came from. Is that the case with some of the songs in this show?
Yeah, I would say probably the most well-known song from this show is I Am What I Am, which is the big number that Zaza sings at the end of Act One. That's probably the most famous one.
I would say, yeah.
Now tell us about some of your numbers in the show.
Well, I do I Am What I Am, which is, I think, a pivotal song in the show, certainly in the plot of the show. It's also very dramatic and very meaningful, I think, to a lot of us who identify as gay men, and I'll leave it at gay men, but it's very pivotal to those of us who have lived a life, and I'm a little bit older than a lot of the younger gay men in Kansas City.
You look very young to me.
Well, thank you. I'm not, but who have had a little bit easier life than some of us had back in the day, shall we say. And I think it's a very, very important song, and it's very touching to people who understand that process, that coming out process, that identifying and living a life of who we really are in the world. And for some of that, us, that's easier than others. And for some of that is still a major struggle. So it's a great song in that way.
In doing this show and your particular role in the show, did that experience make it more difficult to easier?
Well, this is a dream role for me. I saw the version that Kip mentioned that opened in New York in 83. I saw it in 1984 and have wanted to do this role ever since. And one of the reasons I've wanted to do it is for that reason, is that it is such a true role. In the sense that there really are people out there that live their life like Albana and Zaza. I mean, I'm not one of those in my daily life, but there are people out there that live that life. And that song, I Am What I Am, is very, very pivotal in that. I also think my first song in the show is called Mascara. Most people refer to it as A Little More Mascara because that's a phrase that's in the song a lot. And I actually changed from Albana, the male role that I play, into Zaza, the female, on stage, with a little help from my maid, Jacob, which I also appreciate very much. But I change from one character to another, from one persona to another, and that's a very interesting, challenging thing to do as well while you're singing, to put on dresses and other things, is something I had to learn to do while I had worn many dresses in my life. I had never had to put them on stage while I was performing, so that's very interesting too. But that's my first song, and then I have another great song called La Cage aux Folles, which is the song that I changed costumes in 3 times. But I'm joined on stage in that song by the Cagels, the showgirls, and other characters in the show. And it's a great, huge, I'm not sure how long it is, but it's very long, big show stopper number that's in the first act. And then I finish the act with La Cage aux Folles, or with I Am What I Am, pardon me. And then The Best of Times is a song that might be known to some people from the show. That's mine. And I'm joined by other people on stage in that number. That's in the second act. I have a couple other duets with George, and it's an incredibly fun, fabulous, challenging show to do.
Well, that's really so. Is. It opens this Friday the 7th. Time is getting short. Friday, November 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Barn Players in Mission, Kansas. Their address is 6219 Martway, Mission, Kansas. If you MapQuest things, remember to include the zip code 66202, and you can go online to make your arrangements, thebarnplayers.org. They prefer that you do it that way. If there are particular challenges, such as you're handicapped, you need help with something like that, there is a number you can call, 913-432-9100, but they would prefer that you make your arrangements online at thebarnplayers.org. And I must remember to say you must include the in that, because as I always work in there, there are other organizations around this country called Barn Players, believe it or not. Sure. We have Dudley Ho and Kip Simmons are with us. And Dudley, one of the performers in the show, and Kip Simmons, the director. How many performers are in the show?
We have a cast of 23.
Now, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
You feel like you're herding cattle around?
Sometimes, yes. but fortunately, not everybody is on stage until the very last. So
are there? I'm trying to remember. Are there two sets? One at the club and then one at the home.
It kind of goes all over the place. You know, there are some numbers that are set at the club, and we've also have it set up so we're really bringing the audience into it. A lot of the numbers come out into the house, so to really make the audience feel like they're at the club. There's some scenes that happen at the apartment that George and Alba and live in. They have a scene at the Chez Jacqueline, which is the, you know, with fancy restaurant. There's a scene out in the promenade. So,
well, that involves, you know, a lot of set changes. And tell us about who helped you put all that together.
My set designer is Doug Schrader. He has done a fantastic job. This is the first time I've worked with him, but I'm so happy that I have him because he's done a fantastic job. That's and great. Along with Philip Leonard, who was our lighting designer. He's made it look just absolutely beautiful. And it's really, the set is very, I don't want to say it's simple, but it's just like one piece, and then we kind of change the locale by bringing on furniture or bringing on a bench, you know. So it's not like big sets moving on and off.
Sure.
You know, but it's been set up very beautifully, and I think people are going to like it.
Yeah, with a cast that big, that has to really be a difficult job for the director, and for everyone involved in the cast as well, making sure you don't run into one of the other dancers at the club or something like that.
Yeah. I'm also very fortunate to have a wonderful choreographer, Rob Reeder, who I've worked with many times before, and he's done a fantastic job.
Beautiful.
The numbers look great, and they're fun, and he's also in the show, so he gets to play Kajal as well.
Yeah,
so.
You can imagine what the auditions were like for this. What kinds of things did you ask the performers to do?
Oh, they were so much fun. I actually was a little bit jealous because I wasn't really in on the Kajal like dance audition, but at one point he put on like a song and had them do like a runway walk, and I heard it was just really lots of fun, and everybody just really got into it and had a great time. And the script, this version of the script, actually only calls for 6 Kajals, but I liked everybody so much that we made it 10. So, and they all are doing a fantastic job. They look great.
Was the audition pretty much, Dudley, as you expected?
Yeah, it was very, very fun. It was challenging. I hadn't done a full musical performance like this in about 10 years. So when I went to the audition, I was quite nervous. And they sent me into a room with the other people that were auditioning for the role that I ended up getting. And there were 6 of us. And for some reason, it was with Martha, the music director, which was where I was first, and for some reason she chose people to sing, and I ended up being the last one of the 6. And you know, while there's a part of me that's like, okay, I can hear what the other guys sound like, because I didn't know most of these guys, and I didn't know what all of them sounded like, and there's a part of me that was happy that I got to hear them before me, but it made me more nervous because, oh my gosh, they're all so wonderful. They were all very, very, very good. And I, but I sang and sang more than once. Martha made us sing. I'm sure she's listening to this, but she made us sing entire numbers from the show.
Oh, wow.
Which was great, and she needed to hear those, and we all needed to hear those. But it was a little bit stressful because usually it's 16 bars or 32 bars at a callback situation or something like that, and then they make some decisions. But we sang entire pieces to show our ranges, and obviously to show our what we thought the character should do with these songs. So it was very, very tense for a little while, and then we went in and read with Kip. It was, I echo his feelings because it would have been fun to see some of the Kajal auditions because I can't imagine that they wouldn't have been a stitch to watch. But that I didn't get to do that either. But it was the audition process at the end was a 4.5 hour, I think, process.
Yeah, and it was a long afternoon.
Yeah. You worked them pretty good.
Yeah. Well, we had a lot of great people, you know, auditioning for this show. I mean, the show doesn't get produced very often.
No.
And it's unusual that the two leads are like men of a certain age. You know, and we just had the cream of the crop come out and audition for us, and I probably could have cast those leads like 4 or 5 times over. So it was, they made it all very difficult, but they all brought their A game, and it was just a fantastic audition.
And it was 4.5 hours in pumps, which I will never forgive him for. But that's I'm kidding.
The show opened,
and now I have 4.5 hours of pumps every night, so it's all right.
The show opens this Friday night, the 7th of November at 7:30, basically at the barn. It's 3 weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, a Friday evening at 7:30, same on Saturday evening, a Sunday afternoon matinee. Then performances continue the next weekend, the 14th, 15th, and Sunday, the 16th. A special industry night performance on Monday, the 17th. Is anything different for that? Any of the arrangements made differently?
Nope, it's all the same. It's a slight price change, but other than that, it's just like any other performance.
So Monday the 17th at 7:30 p.m. Then a few days later, the following third weekend of performances, Friday the 21st, Saturday the 22nd, wraps up with a Sunday afternoon matinee, excuse me, on the 23rd at the Barn Players of Johnson County, of Mission, Kansas. The address, 6219 Martway, Mission, Kansas. Remember, if you MapQuest 66202 is the zip code. Arrangements can also be made online at thebarnplayers.org. And if you have a special concern, a problem, a handicapped situation, anything like that, the number you can call to get, and they'll call you back to help you answer your questions, 913-432-9100. And as I said, the Barn Players, don't forget the, that's important here, thebarnplayers.org. Speaking with Dudley Hoag, one of the performers in the show, one of 23 in the show, and Kip Simmons, the director. Dudley has been living in New York the last 4 years. How did you get from Kansas to New York and then back to Kansas City?
We moved to New York in 1996. My husband got a job offer that we couldn't turn down, and so we moved to New York, and then I became the executive director of the New York City Gay Men's Chorus, did a little bit of theater work in Queens and in Manhattan a little bit, and then we moved back 4.5 years later. So we've actually been back for 10 or 12 years, or longer than that, actually. But this is the first full theater production that I've done, musical theater production that I've done since I've been back. Done a lot of stuff with the Heartland Men's Chorus and with a few other organizations around town, but not necessarily full theater productions. So
lots of things in New York.
But this is home.
Lots of things in New York.
I did a few off Broadway things, shows. Did a couple things in Queens. I worked for my first job there was located in Queens, and there was a theater there that I did a couple shows in. It's very fun. It's very fun to live in New York, and it's a great place. But
actors from New York have told me, said, you know, you can audition 3 or 4 or 5, 10 different places every day.
Oh, yes, you can. And a great deal of actors that actually live in New York work elsewhere because there's too many of them in New York, and so they audition in New York for a theater production in Chicago or sure. L.A. or something like that. So a lot of people do that. But it was a very great adventure while we lived there. But Kansas City and Kansas is kind of home, so we're back.
The pace is a little bit slower.
Pace is just
here.
A little slower, yes. Just a little slower, except for the last couple weeks.
You probably missed the subway system.
No, I don't.
No, you don't?
I mean, it was great while I lived there, and once you get to know how to do it, it's very easy and very simple.
Well, that's what I've been told.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it's very simple.
Yeah.
But it's great when you're there.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
See Dudley opening this Friday night in La Cage aux Folles at the Barn Players of Johnson County. Kip's, I don't know, Any words to the wise before the show starts?
Just come out and see us. It's going to be a really great show.
Do you have plans beyond this show?
I will be directing another production at the Barn next season. I'll be doing Thoroughly Modern Millie next September. So that's the next directing gig I have.
Direct a lot at the Barn, other places.
This is my third production that I've directed at the Barn. So they have me come back. So.
Must appreciate your work.
I really enjoy working at the Barn. They're a little bit of an artistic home for me, and I perform there a lot. And they're a family.
Sure.
So.
Well, it all kicks off this Friday night, the 7th, at 7:30 p.m. Three weekends now, folks. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, a matinee on Sunday afternoon for three consecutive weekends. And don't forget that Monday, the 17th of November, performance at 7:30, an industry night. That's so friends of yours that are in other shows that don't have a performance on Monday.
That's right.
And most theaters don't. If you're in the Union, for instance, that is a night mm-hmm. that is always mm-hmm. dark. Mm-hmm. You can come on Monday night to see the show on the 17th. Also at 7:30 p.m. I want to thank you both for being here. Dudley Hoag, one of the lead actors in the show. Love the name.
Thank you. Thank you.
You said yours is Scottish.
It is.
Yeah,
I don't know where you got that spelling of yours, but that's
know.
All right.
I don't know at all. As Kim Simmons, the director of La Cage aux Folles, opening this Friday at the Barn Players in Johnson County. TheBarnPlayers.org for more information. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
When we return after our break, we're going to go opera. The Italian Opera and Italian Girl in Algiers when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Funny, profane, and arty, perhaps to a fault, the pitch-black comedy Birdman may be the most original and imaginative movie of the year. Michael Keaton gives a riveting performance portraying a former movie star best known for playing a superhero. Expect Oscar nominations for Best Picture, for Keaton's magnetic performance, for the razor-sharp turns by supporting players Edward Norton and Emma Stone, as well as for the spot-on work of director Alejandro González Iñárritu. Many viewers will utterly hate this bawdy and bleak backstage satire, but there's no denying its cinematic virtuosity. In that respect, Birdman soars. Jake Gyllenhaal may snag an Oscar nomination as well for his menacing performance in the dark and disconcerting thriller, Nightcrawler. Gyllenhaal plays a disturbed and creepy freelance cameraman who sells grisly crime and accident footage to local TV stations thirsty for ratings. Rene Russo is a news director who believes the old mantra, if it bleeds, it leads. When things aren't violent enough, Jake's sociopathic character begins taking matters into his own hands. Troubling and cynical, Nightcrawler provides plenty of fodder for post-movie coffee talk about the ethics of local TV news and the public's lust for the sensational. Also opening this week, Two Faces of January is a suspense thriller involving American tourists in Greece and Istanbul in the early 1960s. Viggo Mortensen and Kirsten Dunst star. Before I Go to Sleep is yet another suspense drama, this one based on the best-selling novel about a woman who, due to an accident, awakens each day with no memory. Nicole Kidman and Colin Firth star. Horns is a supernatural thriller starring Daniel Radcliffe just in time for Halloween. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM.
Freeze Frame!
This week, a conversation with Representative Keith Ellison, the first Muslim elected to Congress.
The very first question at your very first press conference was, aren't you a Muslim?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah. I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday from noon to 1, right before the Jazz Disciple. On the next Pacifica Radio Archives from the Vault, a tribute to Woody Guthrie, featuring interviews with Woody's wife Marjorie, his longtime friend Will Geer, his best friend Beth Lomax Hawes, along with classic music and interviews with Woody himself. And remember, if you want to hear great early radio, well, you have to get up early. Wednesday morning from 5 to 6. Hey, this is your old pal Mike Murphy inviting you to join me on your Wednesday morning buzz for my conversation with Adrian Belew. We'll talk about what he's been up to lately, as well as his varied career with Frank Zappa, David Bowie, and of course King Crimson. That leaves only one question. Will you be listening to KKFI on Wednesday morning?
Well, whenever people ask this question, I'm always slightly embarrassed because I don't listen to anything else.
Should violence be viewed as a contagious disease? This is the contention of some experts in the field. Dr. Rex Archer will discuss how violence is spread from one person to another, how violence fits the basic infectious disease framework, and how our understanding of this is leading to better strategic plans for reducing violence in Kansas City. This Wednesday at noon, the All Souls Forum, each week here on KKFI.
The Grassroots Radio Conference took place in Ames, Iowa this summer. Folks came from community radio stations all across the country. Hear some of those voices on Sprouts, Thursday at noon.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show, right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to journey on over to, actually, the Kauffman Center. I don't know, should we journey to the Kauffman Center or to the Lyric Opera performing and rehearsal space area? I don't know.
We just switched over.
We're now in the Kauffman Center,
right,
officially,
correct.
In the big building where they are presenting beginning this Saturday, November 8th, that's 7:30 p.m. Italian Girl in Algiers, and that will be the show. This is what the second, I believe, show of the Lyric Opera's current season.
That's
and,
correct.
And with us to tell us all about it, one returning guest, brave enough to come back. Thank you so much. Ben Wager is with us. He's a bass baritone. He returns after a great run in La Boheme last year, and later on this year will be in Tosca.
That's
well.
Right.
So that means they liked you, so they had you back.
Must have been doing something right.
Well, always glad to hear that, I suppose. I suppose opera is no different than any other field. It's kind of like sports. You know,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Patrick Carfizio?
That's correct, Carfizio.
Carfizio is with us as well, also a bass baritone. He is making his Lyric Opera debut, but I should add, the Albuquerque Journal said that he stole the show in his performance down there. What's it like to get a review like that?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful when you open the newspaper and they look at you and they say, you were good. Actually, you were more than good. You were wonderful.
What did the other stage singers say when the writer said, he stole the show?
He stole the show. Well, you just kind of put your head down quietly and keep working.
Yes. Well, just be very humble, I suppose.
Be thankful and humble.
The show is The Italian Girl in Algiers. I don't know much about the show. I'm going to let you talk about it. But it is at the Kauffman Center. It opens this Saturday the 8th. Performances continue Wednesday the 12th at 7:30 p.m., Friday the 14th at 7:30 p.m., and Sunday the 16th at 2 o'clock p.m. in the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, the big building that we're so proud of down there. Patrick, you'd heard about it before.
Did it live
up to the image and all hype, I guess?
It absolutely does. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous space, and it's going to be wonderful to perform there. And it's stunning from the outside as well. So it's been really great to get to be on that stage.
Yeah, I used to ask the show, are the performers mic'd? And most of the performers come here and say, no, we are not mic'd.
Nope, no mics.
No mics.
I asked you that last year.
Yep. You did.
And what did you answer?
I said, no, and that's one of the... That's one of the draws of opera is what you hear is it's not processed in any way. It's not coming through an amplifier. It's all acoustic, and we are trained to fill up that 1600 seat hall with nothing but our own power and resonance and that kind of thing.
What it's like to just let it go.
It is, well, it's one of the top three best feelings.
I'm glad it's in the top three.
Well said, well said.
What about Patrick? Is that what they do everywhere else you've been?
Yeah. I mean, opera in general is not amplified, and it's a thrilling experience, both as the performer and as an audience member, to just be able to experience music without any barrier. Experience the human voice, experience the creation of ensemble without the barrier of any kind of amplification at all, or the enhancement or any of it. It's just everything that is natural working together.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about the story, Italian Girl in Algiers. Tell us a little bit about what the story is about.
The story is about, well, this Italian girl with her
really? Italian girl? Okay.
with her dandy boyfriend, that's me, by the way, crash lands in Algeria.
Oh, yeah.
Of all places. And it just so happens that the really bored Bey of Algiers,
that would be me,
would be him, is looking for looking for something new, because he's got his harem and he has his wife and he's rather bored of both of them.
Oh, I see.
He's bored of all 30 or 40 of them, to be completely honest. But then again, even if he had a new one that he married 2 days ago, he'd still be bored of them today.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of the nature of being Mustafa. And so the Italian girl and her dandy show up, and just so happens that one of his many slaves is a gentleman who, of course, is not in his harem, who happens to be the lover of the Italian girl, and it's her true love. And she has come, in truth, in search of him. But the dandy, being a bit confused, thinks that this is going to be his in for a lifelong beautiful relationship with Isabella, the Italian girl. And, yeah, that doesn't really work out so well for the dandy. It works out wonderfully for the lover, who is the tenor.
Of course.
Yeah, it always works out for the tenor. And it really doesn't work out so well for Mustafa, except that it puts him in his place, and that really needs to happen.
Really?
It really needs to happen.
I would think you would rule the roost down there. In fact, heads would roll.
Heads would roll.
Very
people
close.
Would be impaled. All kinds of horrible things would happen, or are threatened to happen. But in the end, they don't happen. And he really gets his comeuppance.
Ah.
He definitely does.
Okay. Well, we don't usually tell the ending, but
well, we good. Haven't given away everything.
That's right.
And there's lots that goes on along that journey. So,
okay, you have your interpretation of your character's part. You've been called a dandy.
I'm the dandy. I'm the
I'm the guy. I show up. I think that she's in love with me.
Uh-huh.
It's my plane. I'm dressed well. I have lots of money.
Yes, there's a plane.
I'm that self-important character that always has an eye in the mirror and this is always concerned with himself, and I'm the kind of guy who refers to myself in the third person
throughout
the show. And everybody can get a good chuckle on just how absurd of a character I am, and that's what I'm here for. And no, I don't get the girl at the end, but there's a twist on the ending where it doesn't turn out so badly for my character.
So you're the handsome guy that's also the comic relief.
Well, one of them.
Okay.
A certain type of comic relief.
Yeah. There are many types of comic relief in this particular show.
Yeah. Well, opera's like that. You know, you never know what's coming when, really, if you don't know the storyline ahead of time. I'm often surprised, because I guess I think stereotypically, the comic relief has to be kind of a clownish, buffoonish type person. So, but that's obviously not true in this case.
Well, there's plenty of that, too. A little bit of everything.
Now, certainly the Sultan, or they don't refer to you as the Sultan.
The Bey.
The Bey
of Algiers.
Surely he's not the comic relief.
Well, not directly, but, the beauty of situational comedy is that those that don't think they're going to be the comic relief end up being the laughing stock sometimes. So it's the beauty of Rossini comedy.
How many wives does the Bay have? You said 30, 40?
Oh, it's debatable. 30, 40, depends. I mean, you only really see three or four of them in the course of the show.
And they're all in the show, and they all have a costume and all of that.
Oh, yeah, they're all in the show, and they're all costumed. And some of them are going to really surprise a few people. Oh. but they're, yeah, that's about the... You know, his grouping.
Well, I wanted to ask about the costuming. That has to be a very arduous endeavor for the performers as well as the costuming department.
It is, absolutely. It's, you know, as with all things in opera, it's multiple art forms coming together to create this one beautiful, massive performance production. And costuming in this show in particular, and pretty much in general for me, I end up being upsized in some way, shape, or form. in this case, it's a whole lot of muscle, which is lovely. I don't have to go to the gym. It's wonderful. yeah, there's a lot of detail, a lot of layering. You know, we're happy for air conditioning. but there are a lot of absolutely exquisite costumes in this that have been created as part of the production.
Well, if you've ever been to the Middle East, as I have, it's hot every day.
Yeah, that's correct.
How did they get away with wearing all those layers?
Well, I'm sure they probably don't choose to wear wool all that often, but I could be wrong.
Or polyester.
Or polyester. Silks and cottons and all the rest tend to be more grateful.
Yeah, we think of them of... Algeria is actually northern Africa, but we think of that as such a mysterious place. Mysterious people, you know, what do they like? What do they really think? All of that. Do you get into the character?
Oh, sure. I mean, we've gotten into it insofar as, of course, the location, but also just understanding some of the basic ideas of the culture, doing a little study on the dances of Algeria, which has been fascinating. It's incredible what you can find on YouTube.
oh, you can find everything on YouTube.
It's incredible what you can find on YouTube. But we definitely have discussed the different relationships between cultures, because you have a real collision in this of European cultures and of North African cultures. So that's definitely part of the work.
How does your character view this? He drops in a mysterious place, a land of enchantment, authors have written before.
Yes, he's also Italian, so he gets dropped into this situation. That's part of the comedy of it is this fish out of water, this self-important person who, and with the mannerisms and the of an Italian.
Well, you can actually say two sentences without gesturing.
Not in this show. No.
Not in this show.
I think it's a gesture for absolutely everything. But yeah, and you know, it's the same kind of thing. It's amazing what you can see, what you can find on YouTube, and
sure,
pick up as much as you can.
Well, tell me about some of the numbers in the show. What numbers would be recognizable to the public? There are songs that the public knows, but they don't necessarily know what show it came from. I hear the one about the tragic Pagliacci. I hear that all the time in commercials, on shows.
Sure, and, of course.
I think, oh, that's from Pagliacci. But a lot of people probably don't know that's that.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, there's lots of opera around us at all times that's coming from different sources, and we're not aware that's what's being used to advertise ragu, or to be, to advertise taking a beautiful trip to, to Africa, or to Asia, or wherever. The Loch Medoc gets pulled out lots.
All the time.
Lots, and people go, what's that pretty song? Well, that pretty song is a part of an opera, and we have a couple of those in this. This work isn't done as often as some other Rossini. People would always know the William Tell Overture, and would they connect that with Rossini? Not necessarily. A Rossini opera? Not necessarily. But they... there are still some beautiful tunes in this, Languir, which is the tenor's aria when he's longing for his love right at the beginning of the performance. It's gorgeous, and it is something you walk away humming. It just stays inside of you. It's a fantastic, fantastic piece. And then I would say her aria in the second act, when she is about to really cuckold the three guys, and they are, the three of them are not in cahoots yet.
Oh.
The three of them are just about to be in cahoots, which, of course, is only beneficial to the tenor, and then, secondly, to the dandy, and then, Mustafa just, yeah. But that aria, her second aria,
It's really gorgeous, and it's very heartfelt. Even though she's about to trick them, it's a very heartfelt expression of exactly where she is on this journey, and it's a moment of vulnerability that really can turn the plot beautifully.
Yeah, there's a lot, in opera, there's a lot of cases of mistaken identity.
Oh, yes.
A lot of love gone wrong, love gone right, but love gone wrong as well.
Sure.
Opera's kind of famous for that. And also the tragic endings in most of the operas. That's not the case in this one.
No. No. I don't think so. No. I mean, it's basically a happy ending for just about everybody involved, I think.
Well, that's pretty
even,
that's not
even the baby,
achieve.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's hard to achieve.
It is hard to achieve, but it's done well in this case.
Now, absolutely. Are you singing this one in Italian?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, but we have to, I have to add that by saying at the Kaufman Center, there are devices on the back of the chairs where you could read the translation.
That's right.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
I find, though, that as you're watching the opera being performed, you can pretty much follow the storyline without a translation.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely can.
Yeah, you guys do a great job of acting it out.
I've
seen some of the broadest acting I've ever seen in opera.
Yes, you do.
Indeed.
I mean, so you both done other kinds of theater as well?
Yeah, I grew up doing musical theater on the local level. I've done a little bit of straight theater as well along the way. But mostly my roots were in musical theater.
Yeah, at what point did somebody take you aside and say, you know, you have the kind of voice that would work well in opera? There must have been other singers have told me that they, at some point, someone did that to them. Says, you know, with your voice, you should really try this.
Oh, yeah. No, I was 16 years old, and the gentleman I was studying voice with at the time said, no, you really could sing opera. Let's go try out this role of Zuniga in Carmen. And it's this little tiny opera company down in New Jersey called the Family Opera Company. It's still in existence. And I walked into the first rehearsal, and there were salami sandwiches. And I equated singing opera with salami sandwiches. This is not a bad combination. But I was 16, and there was a lot to learn. And that was, yeah, that was the first person that kind of tapped me on the shoulder said, you might want to think about this.
Yeah, what about for Bim?
Well, I was recently kicked out of a rock band in college. And I decided, well, I want to put my own outfit together. But I wanted to be the front man. I was a bass player. I wanted to be the front man as well. So I went down to the local music store and found a guy who had just moved into town giving voice lessons on one of those advertisements on the walls of music stores. So I took the tab and I had a lesson with him. This was senior year in college, so I was about 22. And I had a lesson with him, and he starts doing scale. He had a background in classical. He starts doing scales and keeps on kind of reaching to the left and lower and lower. He's like, well, there aren't a lot of guys like you in this field. Have you ever thought about singing classical? And I said, no, I didn't know anything about it. I knew absolutely nothing about it. I had thought that the word tenor was a title, kind of like esquire if you're a lawyer. I just I didn't know there was anything to do with range. So when I found
Ben Wager, tenor esquire. that sounds great.
Yeah, so that's kind of how that happened. It was just kind of this light bulb went off, and it kind of made instant sense to me. I can't really explain why, but
it's sort of a Gene Simmons type story.
a little bit, yeah. Yeah, he did do a little bit of acting, didn't he? Runaway. Yeah.
He did, yeah. So, but now that's usually not the case. People go to the conservatory. You probably went to the conservatory.
I did not actually. I went to Catholic University in D.C., which I like to kind of say was the best of a conservatory, but in a liberal arts setting. Because it was fantastic. I had to take all my core liberal arts courses, and then I had to add my music courses and all of that on top of it. So, after my teacher Ron said, oh, this would be a good thing for you, I, of course, went, no, absolutely not. I want to be in the Navy. and I pursued that almost to the point of going to the Naval Academy. Part of my whole college decision-making was included, okay, do I go to the Merchant Marine? Do I go to the Navy? Or maybe I go do the singing thing. Let's see. But I I had fallen in love with opera. I didn't realize how much I had fallen in love with opera.
Yeah, well, the World Series was here recently. I'm sure you heard about it.
Perhaps.
They had some mighty fine singers from the military sing.
They did. Yeah. They did indeed.
The national anthem, well, God Bless America.
God Bless America.
In the seventh inning. And those, they all had military uniforms on.
Well, and many of the people, I mean, I grew up in a town very near to West Point.
Oh.
So many of the concerts that I saw when I was younger, I would go and see New York City Opera and the Met on tour at Eisenhower Hall, at West Point. All of my influences musically really emanated out of seeing musicians in the military perform.
Oh, wow. So we have two unconventional stories. What kind of rock music was it? Was it conventional rock? Or was it,
heavy metal? It was conventional rock. Uh-huh. It was a cover band. We played big rowdy college bars, between top 40 stuff, that kind of thing.
All right. A bit of original stuff. The rowdier, the better.
Absolutely. Especially when you're 21 years old.
That's right. I haven't heard many stories of people coming out of that and going into professional opera at such a high level.
There aren't a lot of them, but to be honest with you, the lower the voice, especially with males, the stranger the stories can get.
Correct.
There are a lot of guys out there that, in fact, we were both talking about a guy that we both worked with at some point who was an all-American defensive end for the Citadel and then went on to be a stockbroker. And then his wife got him voice lessons for his 30th birthday and got offered a full ride to BU on the spot because he makes us sound effeminate. I mean, you should hear this guy.
Gorgeous voice.
Instances like that. Like I said, for basses, bass baritones, the stories can get pretty strange.
Yeah. Is it a contest to see how low you can go? Ever do that?
No, I don't know if I've ever done that. Tenors and baritones usually have that.
Well, the sopranos opposite. Try to go up and break the glass. Yes. I don't know, is that a fallacy? Can they actually break glass?
It's kind of a fallacy.
So, does low do anything? Like if you can go low enough, you can make your animals scream or something.
make people's insides
rumble the soul.
Right down at the base of the abdomen.
You know, what the truth is, even with basses, the high notes are the prized notes. With low basses as well. You need to have low notes that are heard over orchestras, but what's really prized are the tops of anybody's voice.
Oh, sure.
This is what's really prized.
Well, you sing some of those same notes on paper, but you sing it at such a lower level.
Well, yeah, our top notes are going to be lower than a tenor's top notes, but there's something that happens when a singer or a human is on stage and they're at the top of their range, and regardless of whether they're a tenor, a soprano, or a baritone, mm-hmm. or a bass, it registers the same to the audience, I believe. I think it's the same.
Yeah.
Our brains do all the work. It's like, that is a high note for them, and that's
enough. Are the performers competitive? How low can I go, or is that set aside in favor of the character and the song and the music?
That's set aside.
I mean,
every now and then you'll, not in this production by any means, but every now and then, very, very rarely, you'll get into a fun competition where you'll have artists that have done, it happens in Rossini actually sometimes, of artists that have done Rossini for 20 or 30 years and they're all experienced and they know all of their colleagues will just play. And they'll get into a moment, and they'll say, you know what, I'm going to... And they'll say it. They'll decide in the moment to change, and it'll be a situation where it has to be repeated. Where that same exact ornamentation needs to be repeated by seven different people. So if you're the first one to throw down the gauntlet, the next goes, okay, I can do that. Boom. And then maybe three or four down the line, they might add one more twist or turn. So it's a good competition. It's a really healthy competition that just... gives more dimension to the music and to the performance.
Sure. Italian Girl in Algiers. Don't want to forget where she is. Italian Girl in Algiers opens this Saturday, November 8th at 7:30 p.m. Performances continue then on Wednesday the 12th at 7:30 p.m. Friday the 14th. That's a shortest break you have there, too.
That is, yeah.
Friday the 14th at 7:30 p.m. And then Sunday afternoon, a matinee on the 16th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, just south of downtown Kansas City. The number to call for more information is 816 877-711-7344 or online at kcopera.org. Some of the mysticism, the magical Middle East, Africa, the Middle East, such a mystery to us over here until you actually go there. Then you see what it's actually like. But it's a mystery.
Yeah.
It is a mystery.
Absolutely.
You'll help convey that to the people. And it probably adds, the mysticism probably adds to the magic of the performance.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Going on beginning this Saturday, November 8th, at the Kauffman Center, a production, of course, of the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. 816-471-7344 or online at kcopera.org. I want to thank you both for being with us, kind of taking the veil off of some of the mystery and telling us about what's going to be happening starting this Saturday at the Lyric Opera, Italian Girl in Algiers. I want to thank our guest, Ben Wager, is with us again, and he's going to, he had a great run last year in La Boheme.
Great to be back.
And later this year, going to be in Tosca again.
That's right.
That's right. And Patrick Carfizia. He will be with us. Well, he is going to be with us. This is his Lyric Opera debut. And I'll repeat again, the Albuquerque Journal said he stole the show.
Thanks.
So maybe you'll steal the show away.
We're all going to have a good time.
Thank you so much, both of us, for
being
here.
Thank you.
The Jazz Insider is next. I peeked over his shoulder when he was in the production room. He has some great things planned. So jazz from 1 to 3, then the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.